Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with sportingbet.com.
Today, beach balls rain down at Anfield, but it's Liverpool who bounce back and Sir Alex who blows up in the big Premier League clash of the weekend. Meantime, Chelsea romp past Rovers, Spurs get stuck with Stoke, and oh Bobby, how could you? Zamora targets Rosette again in Man City Fulham. There's news from the lower leagues and from abroad with a bizarre win for Milan against Chievo, and in Spain, to quote local reports, Super Barca go ballistic, pennant is atrocious. All that plus your post and Barry's 30 seconds on the MLS in today's Football Weekly. On today's lineup, listeners, we have James Starr.
Hi, James.
Hi, James. There'll be a popular bit of news that for listeners. They're very much enjoying your apparitions thus far.
Really?
Yeah, very much so, yeah. Barry Glendenning, likewise, I'm sure.
I'm not so sure, but how are you? Good morning and all that.
Indeed to you too. And Rob Smythe, the man who's just said, I just want this day to end. Rob.
Thanks for that, James.
Maybe. Maybe the next 40 minutes or so will bring a little bit of cheer into your life.
Your current state
entirely unconnected with events yesterday at Anfield. And maybe perhaps with the fact that you've been charged with digging out five things we've learnt this weekend for the benefit and et cetera of Guardian readers worldwide. What's your nugget from Liverpool Man United?
Well, not really a nugget. I just think Ferguson should kind of, instead of blaming his players and the referee, should look in the mirror, really. No, I think he should just... Basically, he dictates the tactics, and those tactics were negative and essentially spineless.
Right.
They had their most hated rival kind of dangling over a precipice, and they gave him a helping hand, let them dominate the game, flounced around waiting to concede a goal, which Vidic and Ferdinand were always going to manage to do for them, pair of clowns that they are at the moment. And I just think Ferguson... In context, I thought it was a staggeringly spineless piece of management, personally. And it's quite dispiriting, really.
Producer Ben's just paging your will to live, so hopefully in the next part it will be showing up. It is funny how Liverpool seem to have this effect on United. I mean, even people like N'Goh and last year that fellow Dossena managed to score again. So what is it?
I don't know, really. I mean, Liverpool thoroughly deserved to win yesterday. I think this game, from a United point of view, was actually worse than the 4-1, because the 4-1 was kind of, there was an element of smash and grab about it, even though the result is humiliating. Whereas yesterday, Liverpool were thorough. Liverpool were the only team who actually tried to win. Ferguson often says that about smaller teams coming to Old Trafford, only one team tried to score. But it was the same was true yesterday. I think Benitez knows how to set up a team defensively against United. I think that helps. But it also helps when, as yesterday, United just kind of piddle around midfield and don't actually try to penetrate. I would say yesterday was more about United's failings than Liverpool's qualities, as good as Torres' goal was.
Right. It was a fantastic goal, and there were plenty of positives for Liverpool. The fact that Jamie Carragher was back in good form, and the fact that Benny Yoon slotted so comfortably into the creative role in midfield, so that Gerrard was, dare I say, barely missed.
Yeah, I thought Benny Yoon was very impressive. Lucas had a good game as well. I haven't been...
By his standards, should we just say by his standards?
I think Lucas has got a pretty bad press from some Liverpool fans just for the crime of not being as good as Xavi Alonso. I don't think he's that bad, and on the basis of yesterday's performance, I don't think it was that good either. He was very lucky not to be booked for persistent fouling, and if he had been booked, that might have affected the rest of his performance because he'd have been on the brink or had to be more careful.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Lucas is a reasonably competent player. I think there's now, his reputation is no way reflective of how good he is. It's become this thing in society almost where people, I think he's rubbish, yeah, but I think he's rubbisher, yeah, but I think he's the worst player I've ever seen. And that's kind of stuck to him. He's not great, but he's all right, he's a
player. Can you think of any other players who've been hit by that same
thing? Bobby Zamora, maybe.
Really? Yeah.
Well, Zamora, I mean, I haven't seen enough of Zamora to be sure, but I do think there's a thing now where we have to, once someone's labelled as bad, we have to go to whole hog and say, oh, well, he's the worst player ever. I mean, Lucas, I'd like to see Lucas on a football field with us four and see who came out on top.
With who, sorry?
With us four.
Right. Why would you want to see that?
Well, it might put his ability in perspective, I think.
It's hardly a benchmark.
To see us wheezing after him.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Great result for Liverpool, just when they needed it most. And Torres only picked on the bus, apparently, by Rafa Benitez.
That's the story.
Fantastic goal. What happens, though, next for them? Does this mean they're going to breeze their next match away to Fulham? Have they now rediscovered themselves?
I don't necessarily think that yesterday's game means a whole lot in the bigger picture for Liverpool. Okay, it stopped the rot in terms of the run of defeats, but a lot of people were expecting Liverpool to beat, admittedly, a very poor Manchester United side yesterday, and they did. Chelsea are still 5 points clear of them. Other teams around them still with games in hand. Liverpool still have their failings. Rafa Benitez isn't a great new manager overnight. His critics are still going to be criticising him, and his supporters will still be supporting him as well. But I don't think this one game changes everything, as people might say.
Well, as you mentioned, Rafa Benitez not becoming a great success overnight. But if my memory serves, on a league table of managers that have been through 200 league games with Liverpool, Benitez actually has the second best record. Only Kenny Dalglish did better in his first 200 games. In fact, if you were to pit, again, basing this on memory and not on a piece of paper in my hand, Benitez's record in those first 200 games with, say, Alex Ferguson or, what's that, Rob? Arsene Wenger, then you would find that actually Benitez comes out on top of those three. So he's not been bad.
That's a classic example of a stat that means absolutely nothing. The game has changed so much.
You might have let me know earlier.
No, but since 2002 or 2003, the big four have been so superior to the rest that you cannot compare between generations, I don't think.
Right.
In my opinion.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
What does yesterday's result mean for Rio Ferdinand and Vidic? I mean, there's definitely a case that Johnny Evans should be first choice centre half for United. Yeah. Is Ferdinand even going to make the World Cup squad?
The big thing about Ferdinand is that he was done for pace by Bellamy, and you thought, well, that's unusual. You've never seen him be done for pace. And he was done for pace again yesterday. You have to think that when things like that happen, you have to worry whether he's gone. Because it's not just the judgment errors you don't mind, because he has periods like that. But to be burned off by Torres as he was and by Bellamy suggests he has real problems. I agree that Evans should be the number one centre-back for the time being.
It wasn't just the pace, it was the strength, though, as well. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what people might have been surprised by, Torres actually having the muscle to keep Ferdinand off in that position. But I think, I mean, if people actually think that England could get far enough into the World Cup that they could actually face Spain in the knockout stage, you could see it as a foresight for next summer. But if you say, you look at Ferdinand now and John Terry, who's still on big, big international occasions, isn't the player that everyone makes him out to be. Mm. England's centre-back situation is very, very weak.
And the other
he's the worst defender I've ever seen, actually.
Yeah, the other concern is who's the backup? Upson, Lescott against Brazil or Spain, really? I mean, Ledley King is obviously good enough. It's just whether you would back
him. Ryan Shawcross.
Yeah, he's the best defender I've ever seen.
Yeah, there you go. Problem solved, Barry. Let's move on. Chelsea, you mentioned Chelsea.
Did I?
Yeah, somebody did.
All right.
Somebody mentioned Chelsea.
Sorry for ruining your seamless link there. It's Chelsea hammered Blackburn Rovers 5-0. Yes. Blackburn Rovers, I think, had two players out with swine flu.
Indeed they did. What players, too?
David Dunn and
Christophe Samba.
So they're now, this opens up the possibility that because the rest of Blackburn's players looked like they were suffering or played like they were suffering from swine flu or some other debilitating virus, they were dismal, and Sam Allardyce said their effort was disgraceful, blah, blah, blah. But I wonder now, is there going to be an outbreak of swine flu in the Blackburn ranks? Very contagious virus. Chelsea's players would presumably have to be tested. So all of football could shut down for a day or two.
Well, it's quite possible. It shut down in France.
Then what would we talk about?
Indeed. It shut down in France this weekend.
Well, it didn't really shut down. The game between Marseille and Paris Saint-Germain was postponed, but luckily for the fans, it was postponed late enough for them to be already at the ground in Marseille, so they were still able to have their riot and get canisters of tear gas and whatnot chucked at them by police. Hmm. So their day's fun wasn't entirely ruined.
Right.
Pretty well tooled up fans, though. One fan had a crossbow, and the police, I did see a fantastic picture of a policeman with a double-barreled flare gun. I mean, this was some serious hardware that both sides had, so.
Wow. I read that it's 21 unanswered goals that Chelsea have scored at Stamford Bridge since Hull, unbelievably enough, last managed to net there.
Yeah, they had that weird thing last season where their home Stamford Bridge a bit of fortress, and they only won about half their games at home last season. This year they've won them all, and they just look unstoppable at the bridge.
Rob, did you learn anything from this game this weekend?
I learned, James, that Chelsea aren't as dependent on their attacking fullbacks as everyone says. Oh. Kind of, we think in a diamond formation, the only way you get width is through the fullbacks, but they had Colum Bozingra out, Belletti playing on his wrong side, the left, and Ivanovic isn't a very good attacker. And they still obliterated Blackburn. And they just have such good players. They can break you down anyway, really.
Right, that was Ashley Cole was out because, of course, Joe Cole.
Joe Cole played in the role we've all been waiting to
see.
How
significant was this?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I was doing it minute by minute. I wrote that in a few years' time, if he ever becomes a great player, we might look back on this as a turning point. Him playing the hole for the first time for Chelsea, I suspect. And he played all right. He looked slightly rusty, as you'd expect. But there were enough signs that it is his natural home, really. Kind of, he's such a mischievous player and kind of makes things happen with two players ahead of him. And yeah, bodes quite well for them. Ancelotti called him a genius, but someone told me that was kind of lost in translation. It just means...
Geniale, probably.
Yeah. But even then, you could tell he clearly has big plans for him there.
Okay. Well, just moving on then, we had lots of people posting in before the weekend. Roti2 was one of them, saying, not enough Arsenal propaganda. It's not fair. Show us some credit. We're potentially only a point behind United. This weekend's result, though, and indeed the game with Alkmaar, is exactly the reason that people don't, I think, pay perhaps enough attention and give enough credit to Arsenal when they do come up with the massive results against the likes of Blackburn.
I think if Arsenal are going to win the league title, they can't draw 2-2 from that position with, what, 16 minutes left at West Ham, as well as West Ham fought back in the final quarter of that game and played very well. If Arsenal are going to win the league, that's the kind of game they've got to eke out and win.
Right, they're only 5 points behind Chelsea with the game in hand.
Yeah, I still think they're probably... I'd have them as second favourites behind Chelsea, personally. But,
right, okay.
But it's a big flaw.
Right, indeed. Now, the one or two other results. Bolton winning. Ivan Klasnic, eh?
Yeah, Ivan Klasnic, I don't know, some people may be unaware, but he's had two kidney transplants in the last few years.
There's a tribe in... James Dart's smiling, but there is a tribe in Borneo that wasn't abreast of that.
It's a contractual obligation. Every mention in the world of Ivan Klasnic has to come with a double kidney. It's like former Darlington chairman, former safe cracker George Reynolds. It's exactly the same. Sorry.
All right, I'm being dissed.
Sorry. But
anyway, he did have those two. And he's the only player who's done anything like this, come back from kidney transplants, and he scored a goal. His first goal.
Yeah, but apparently it's now patronising to mention it.
All right, well, let's talk about... I mean, Bolton, well done to them. What about Everton? What's going on with them? They got beaten 5-0 by Benfica in the Europa League on Thursday.
Yeah.
And now this.
Well, they're in the middle of a big injury crisis at the moment, which isn't helping their cause. I think they've about 11... sort of players who'd be in the first team or on the fringes of the first team are all knacked.
I think they're also paying the price for buying late in August. Moyes did that the year before and he said he really didn't want to do it again, but the Lescott thing threw them so far off course that they're now integrating players when they'd like to have done that kind of over the summer in the first few games.
Because they picked up that fancy jinking Russian winger Biletidinov or something.
Whose name can't be mentioned without people laughing at how awkward it is to pronounce.
Yeah,
and Heitinger and others.
And has he not played at all, Biletidinov?
No, he's played. I don't think he played yesterday, but he scored their equaliser against Wolves the other week.
Oh, right.
But they don't look last year by when they had their really good spell, they looked a very solid, settled side. And this year they just, I don't know, they don't have that same sense of certainty about it.
All right, then. What about Stoke and their win at Spurs?
Well, apparently they were really lucky, but you have to admire them. I mean, last year they relied purely on their home form.
Yeah.
This year they've only lost 1 out of 5 away, which is a great improvement. They're also not as dependent on Delap as they were. Just think it's great management, really, and they seem to be a really good, strong, kind of honest, if that isn't patronising, set of players.
Right.
Well, they were... I kind of fancied them to win that game because that time of year around when the clocks go back an hour, that it's the time Spurs have their annual sort of collapse. And from when they look as if they might be, you know, top four title contenders even, to sort of beginning their plummet down the table so that they can eventually finish somewhere between 8th and 16th. So, yeah, I think Stoke just got lucky that they happened to be playing Spurs on the particular day that their capitulation begins.
But I think Barry's quite right with the time of year for Spurs to be capitulating in that I think today is the anniversary of Juan de Ramos being given the boot from Spurs, and it coincides with him being given the boot from CSKA Moscow on the exact same day.
That's harsh, isn't it? Because he's only been there
46 days.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, they lost 3-1 to FK Moscow at the weekend and are fifth in the table but struggling in their Champions League group.
Right, yeah. There you go. Is he the worst manager you've ever seen, Wendy Rose?
I think he was the best manager I'd ever seen when he was at Seville.
Yeah, he looked fantastic then, didn't he? Right, now, just to finish off, Hull Portsmouth. And they're just intrigued by the latest developments down on the South Coast. Obviously, there's nothing to say about the game except the...
Well, I didn't see this game, but and apparently I'm very lucky because Phil Thompson gave a virtuoso performance on Sky Sports Saturday.
Yeah, he did. He said he looked a broken man, and I know how he feels, but he just... he said the referee should call these players together, call the captains together and say, look, sort this out. If you don't improve, we're going off. It was that bad. And that was in the first half as well.
Right.
And like those Pompey fans who were at that game had a 540-mile round trip. That's a long way to travel to watch utter dross.
Indeed it is. 0-0 it finished. Portsmouth, in the meantime, have been forced into an embarrassing climb down over an interview with their new owner, Ali Al-Faraj, the one who was supposedly a Saudi crown prince who was going to etc, etc. And he then gave an interview to a Saudi paper last week saying, well, actually, I'm not that rich and I've only bought this place. They bought this club for a little investment. Hopefully I can sell it on in 6 months and make a bit of a profit. And the club, Portsmouth, then it threatened everyone with legal injunctions, etc. If they printed this interview, they said it was completely false. But Al-Faraj has now come out and said, well, actually, no, it's not. I am not that rich and I am only in it for the short term. So it looks like problems and indeed the questions hanging over Pompey far from answered.
What about the questions hanging over Phil Brown? Do we imagine he's not
which
long?
Which question
for,
is that?
Well, how long is he going to be in a job?
Was there some allegation that the saving woman from jump off Hull Bridge, a Humber Bridge rather, story wasn't entirely true?
Yeah, I read a blog saying that Brown it was raised again, and Brown got quite flustered, and apparently this blog said that kind of it's the players in the dressing room were with him all the time, and they have no. Recollection of him seeing a woman, but I don't know.
Hard to think of him keeping anybody up. Of course, we've probably done that joke at the time, didn't we?
Well, I read somewhere, possibly in our own blog forum, so I can't claim it for myself, but the version of the story that particular person had heard was that the woman had talked them down off.
That was one of our own posters. On that note of white-hot intensity, let's finish part one. Part two awaits with all sorts of excitement. As you'll be discovering shortly.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Okay, meanwhile, in realms untouched by the light of day, strange creatures work tirelessly in their efforts to reach the surface dwellers and wreak havoc on their world. And you're saying they call this the Championship, James Dart?
Sorry, I thought I was watching Life or something for a second.
No, it was just my whimsical way of introducing a lower league roundup.
Second ear, yes.
Yeah. I tell you what, we've got some posts this week. Chuck Schick, does anyone in the pod know how Newcastle are handling things economically since relegation? Surely they've passed Schick Creek now and are heading towards Exmoor Falls and their canoe is disintegrating. At the bottom of Exmoor Falls are jagged crab rocks and piles of poofer. It just gets really scatological. I'm sorry. but made me laugh anyway. How are they doing, James?
The top.
Right.
Financially, not necessarily in such good position. I mean, they're not.
Ashley's gone off the radar, hasn't he?
Well, I think buyers have gone off the radar for the time being, it seems. And it seems that, I mean, they've got obviously Chris Hughton still in temporary charge, perennial temporary manager Chris Hughton. They're top of the table, so they can't argue with that. They're not playing very well. They managed to win with 10 men at home to Doncaster at the weekend. They trailed 1-0. Doncaster, when the game was 1-1, Doncaster missed a penalty, and then Kevin Nolan popped up, I think, 3 minutes into injury time to score a 25-yarder and get the win. And, I mean, they're not playing fantastic. I was at a Newcastle game a few weekends ago, and when they drew 0-0 with Bristol City, and the fans were just so angry. Booed the team off, and they were still top of the table, I believe, almost or second at the time. And I mean, they've had a lot of things to boo about and get angry about. But I think a lot of fans have a lot of things to get angry about. And,
yeah.
I mean, all credit to them; they're still turning out. You're getting 43,000-44,000 fans and turning up for a home game, which is a fantastic thing. And they're getting more away fans now because I think teams like Bristol City and Plymouth, when I think they went up, they're taking a lot more than the likes of Bolton, Blackburn, and Wigan. I might be doing them a real discredit, but I think that's creating almost a better atmosphere at St James's Park.
It's almost like they're happier, you think, in the better suited, do you think?
Well, it comes back to the old argument, would you rather see a team struggling at the bottom of a division year on year, not that Newcastle have been, or at the top of the table winning games, and they're winning games. In terms of the rest of the season, if they can just keep rolling along as they're doing. And if they start playing well, then I think the rest of the Championship teams are going
to
struggle.
The fans are angry, just to go back on that, because the team aren't playing well.
A host of reasons. Not purely on the team, but purely on Mike Ashley. I think they're almost just frustrated of the situation they're in as well. They think not an injustice of things, but definitely the day that I went, I think the referee had an absolute shocker, and a lot of Newcastle fans around me getting incredibly red and veins popping all over their faces. And
just not just to their usual countenance,
possibly.
Right. Cheap shots aside, Cancinho says, any chance for mention for Forest's recent run of form? 5 wins on the bounce is pretty good going, even in the erratic world of the Championship. I would say especially in the erratic world of the Championship. They lost, though, this weekend, didn't they, to Palace, Crystal Palace, didn't they?
But only 4 points off the top of the table,
right?
According to my table, which is, I mean, they had a fantastic run before that. I think it was 4 or 5, maybe at least, wins in a row, and in the Championship, that'll get you from the bottom end to the playoffs in no time at all. But it's very condensed, as it always seems to be. The top 11 are separated by 6 points in the Championship. Well, you've got Cardiff, who won at Sheffield United 4-3 in a wild game. They're scoring an absolute ton of goals. Peter Whittingham and Michael Schopper, I think, are the joint top scorers with 12 each. And sorry,
was it your watch beep?
No, I think it's just me squeaking or something. I don't know.
Okay. Well, you keep going because you're packing an incredible amount of information.
I'll keep squeaking.
QPR, they're in there as
QPR
well.
QPR are playing very well, and one of the players who've been catching the eye has been Adil Tarapt, I believe, on loan from Spurs, playing fantastically well.
They came from
2-0 down on...
In the Ancelotti sense of the word, or genuinely?
Maybe in the...
What's his name? Adil Tarapt.
He was at Spurs. He's only about 20, but his footwork is unbelievable. The problem is he hasn't got... Whenever I've seen him play at Spurs, he hasn't got a clue what to actually do. But his footwork is astonishing for a player of his age.
It's terrifyingly good for the Championship. And, they were 2-0 down at Derby on Saturday night and came back and won 4-2. They're benefiting as well from having a lot of good loanees in, such as Tarap, such as Jay Simpson they've got up front. Mm-hmm. So they're getting a lot of the London loanees in, much like... And Watford as well, another team. They're down in 11th, but playing very well. They've got Henry Lansbury, Tom Cleverley, Craig Cathcart from Manchester United. And I think it always helps, I think, to... big capital clubs, I think, always get the benefit of the offcasts and loanees from big clubs who are nearby.
Yeah. Dropping down a division further, have Leeds losing their 100% record in a defeat to a 2-1 defeat to Millwall. A friendly game by no accounts.
Well, that was always going to be a tasty one. I believe I read in the paper today that one Millwall fan is on the verge of being banned from life from the New Den.
Or for life. For life, yeah.
Because he wore a Galatasaray shirt to taunt Leeds fans.
All very unfortunate, but it does seem a bit harsh banning him for life. And that it might have been an innocent mistake.
Could be doing him a favour, to be honest.
League 2, meantime, Notts County, where Sven has again pledged his support and loyalty, have extended their unbeaten run. 7 league matches, victory over Crewe. Bournemouth is still top.
Yeah, Bournemouth playing very well, and got a very good young striker. Brett Pittman up front scored a fantastic overhead goal. If no one's seen it, well worth catching it on YouTube.
Okay. Lovely. Rangers in all sorts of trouble. I mean, they're up still near the top.
Speaking of insignificant leagues of minor importance.
Yes, and there were big problems at Rangers now.
Huge problems. They're in financial meltdown, and I think James knows more about this than me. Is it the Royal Bank of Scotland?
HBOS, yeah. The club spending is in the control of HBOS, and that's reassuring.
Right.
For, I'm sure, Rangers fans, given HBOS' recent form. The entire squad is up for sale, and in a bid to try and find...
Seriously, the entire squad has been transfer listed?
Yeah. I think that supposedly they're £30 million in debt. I say that laughing. I really shouldn't. I sound like Nick Griffin. You've got a load of players who are out of contract sort of next summer. There's a lot of uncertainty among the squad, and I think that's why they're struggling on the pitch at the moment as well. And yet they drew 1-1 with Hibs at the weekend, and fantastic goal by Anthony Stokes to get the point.
Good. Like
disco dancing's Anthony Stokes.
The glass spider's Anthony Stokes.
Yeah. £30 million doesn't sound like a great deal of debt by football club standards, is it?
It really doesn't, but I'm sure there's someone from the Middle East who claims that he might be a billionaire that isn't a billionaire that will be able to bail them out.
Yeah. Oh, nice one. Always a bit of light at the end of the tunnel. Lovely. Okay, well, coming up very, very shortly, we're going to be turning our attention to the continent and Sid Lowe with some top news of the Liga and a little bit on Serie A. And Barry Glendinning with a bit of an international corner of his own. No. I can't hear him now. He's turned him down.
Hello. I can hear you.
No, I can't
hear
me. Can you hear him?
Oh, hello. I'm saying hello
very
loudly.
You got him to them, but not to me.
I can hear you, Sid. Jimbo's now walking around the studio with his headphones on and a big plug in his hand. Looking slightly confused.
Jesus wept.
The headphones are working. It's the slot.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
I almost feel like a DJ on a jungle record or something. Can you hear me now? Anyway.
Is that what they do?
Apparently. There's a big shout going out to the Massive and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, Sid, you're representing there, aren't you?
Well, yes. I always think they get the word Massive mixed up with the word absolutely rubbish. Jungle is massive. No, jungle is rubbish.
My word, this is an unprecedented attack on an entire genre of dancehall-based kind of...
Hey, speaking of music, I got inspired by a conversation we had in the pub whenever it was, and I did buy Lawrence Donegan's album, Rattlesnakes.
Oh, well, yeah.
Not just his album, but, you know, him and everybody else's.
What's your favourite cut?
Well, I did actually quite like Rattlesnakes itself. I can't claim to be an expert, having only listened to it a couple of times now. It only arrived a couple of days ago.
Did you find the bass lines particularly well throbbing?
Yeah, and they're very intelligent. The kind of bass lines that, you know, you feel like there's a Guardian journalist waiting to come out there somehow.
Yeah, as if. Now, Sid Lowe joins us on the line from sunny Spain. Sid, I'm getting the feeling you're not alone there.
I'm not alone. I'm in the back of a taxi with a genius. A guy whose surname is Einstein, which is quite brilliant.
Oh, nice one. Okay, and where are you heading to in the wide world of Spanish football?
Well, I'm just on my way back from being in Barcelona last night.
Wow.
Watching them absolutely thump Jermaine Pennant's Zaragoza. Just got off the train, so I'm now in a taxi on my way to a TV studio.
All right, and how bad was it for Jermaine and co?
It was absolutely awful for Jermaine Pennant. I feel ever so slightly silly now, of course, having done an interview with him and talked up his chances of getting an England squad, or more to the point, allowed him to talk up, well, why not? Why shouldn't it happen? And, of course, you know, this weekend was a perfect opportunity for him in so much as it was against probably Europe's best team, fantastic occasion, go to the Camp Nou. And it was quite interesting because, obviously, in a game like that and in a situation like that, you watch him very closely. And I was sitting alongside a mate of mine, and we had a sweepstake on how long it would be before he touched the ball. I think it was 8 minutes old, the game, before he touched the ball. And yet at that stage, he had seen the ball very close to him on numerous occasions. It was like watching a dog run around trying to catch a ball and not reach it, because Barcelona just completely took the mickey out of Zaragoza, totally and utterly destroyed them. And it was just a brilliant, brilliant performance from Barcelona.
No, oh, there you go. Barcelona moving 3 points clear of Real Madrid, who failed to win again. That's what, 3 games in a row now?
Yeah. And perhaps more worryingly from their point of view, they didn't score. It's the first time this season that they haven't scored. Bear in mind, this is a team that's scoring a hell of a lot of goals, which is the one thing that Manuel Pellegrini, a coach who's increasingly under pressure, keeps on pointing out to people, and with some justification. You know, people say we're not playing well, but look at the stats, look at the goals we're scoring. Well, this weekend there weren't any goals to look at. Away at Sporting Gijón, who I thought played very well, and Madrid were a little unfortunate in that they kind of really pushed in the second half. They had a couple of good chances and didn't take them, and it was interesting listening to Jorge Valana, and I think he's quite right as well, coming out after the game and people saying, the obvious accusation you can make at Real Madrid with a team full of stars is, oh, well, they don't try enough, they don't care enough, there isn't enough impetus. And actually, Valdano said that if anything, there's too much of that. Sometimes what we lack is perhaps a little bit of, and this is Valdano's obsession, a little bit of pausa, a little bit of pause, a little bit of clarity of ideas, and a little bit of tranquility.
Mm. Templeton the Rat wants to know how long Manuel Pellegrini's got, and I want curly hair too. Points out that not scoring is bad enough, but against last season's worst defence is even more troubling.
Yeah, it is, although they're no longer the league's worst defence. The league's worst defence is Atletico Madrid, who have actually got their worst defence for the best part of 55 years. But Sporting Gijón have really improved at back. I thought they played very well. And yeah, it is worrying. As for Pellegrini, well, that's a really difficult question. Now, I think there's some very troubling facets to look at in terms of the way that things are going with Pellegrini. And I think, in a way, the thing that will most worry Pellegrini is that Florentino Pérez is a president who doesn't take kindly to criticism. criticism. And he certainly doesn't take kindly to criticism of him. And certainly I would argue, and I've argued this before, that when people said that he walked away last time to try and protect Real Madrid, I think the reason he walked away last time was because for the first time in his reign as president, the fingers were pointing directly at him and not at other people like sporting directors or coaches or whatever. Now, the worrying thing from Pellegrini's point of view is Florentino Perez right now doesn't seem to have a problem with people pointing the finger at Pellegrini, and people are doing that. And I think that will worry Pellegrini, that there is a feeling, obviously, from Florentino's point of view, that, well, if everybody goes for Pellegrini and he keeps getting it wrong, well, then I'll shed him at some stage. Now, I don't think that's going to happen in the short term. I think Pellegrini does have support from parts of the club. But obviously, if he was to keep on losing, then he would lose that support fairly quickly.
Mm. And what about Atletico Madrid? You mentioned them.
Oh, shambles. Brilliant. I mean, just an amazing, amazingly surreal week for Atletico Madrid. I mean, even by their own standards, this is a club who have gone through coaches like you wouldn't believe over the last 15, 20 years. Of course, going back to Jesus Hill, who used to get rid of coaches, got rid of one coach in the first week of the season, got rid of Ron Atkinson after 94 days, and Ron Atkinson claimed that he was worthy of a testimonial for having lasted so long, and he was probably right. But that's continued under his son and his once business partner, Enrique Cerezo, the two guys that run the club now. But what's really happened is that this is, I think, in the last day, in fact, ever since I wrote the column, so these are things that weren't picked up on, has laid bare the divisions of the club. Basically, what happened was this. After the Chelsea game, they decided they were going to get rid of Abel Rossino. He spent 24 hours jumping from coach to coach to coach to coach, changing their minds, or coaches saying no to them. They offered a contract to Michael Laudrup, but he unsurprisingly said no, because they only offered him 6 months. And he quite rightly looked at the institutional case at Atletico and thought, hang on a minute, if you give me 6 months, I'm going to have no response, no authority whatsoever, and I'm going to be out of my ear before you know it. So he said no. Eventually they went for Kike Sanchez Flores, but in 24 hours, they'd been through 9 candidates. Atletico Madrid, they now do have a coach, but what's happened since is the sporting director, the president and the majority shareholder have all come out and said completely contradictory things. And I think now the huge division, the huge internal civil war is out in the open, and of course that can only help make the thing even worse. Yeah. Then, after all of this, new coach, they're going to win, it's going to be fantastic, we're going to come back and sort it out, and they blew it at the weekend, Atletico Madrid, in fantastic style. They were one goal up and 2 men up. So in other words, they're playing against 9 men for 40 minutes, and Mallorca got a 91st-minute equaliser, and they deserved it. They've been the better side with 9 men against Atletico Madrid.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Well, now, one or two posts. Bric-a-brac, I really like the way James says extra at the start of this podcast. It gives me the horn something terrible, just like sitting upstairs, just like sitting upstairs on the bus or watching Crazy in Love by Beyoncé. Okay.
Upstairs on the bus.
Maybe you must have had that, Rob. Vibrations and that. Hmm. What else? Oh, I tell you, there's a new manager at Napoli, Walter Mazzarri. We talked about him the other day. He's won 2 in a row, and they also won their first away game for almost a year this weekend, Rob Swain. They went to Fiorentina, high-flying Fiorentina, and they won 1-0 there. It would have been a lot more if Sebastian Frey wasn't such a brilliant keeper. Next up for Napoli, they're taking on Milan. Yes. Were Milan able to follow up last week's surprise success at the Bernabeu? They
just
were.
About.
Just
how,
about.
How they did it. How did they do it?
Well, it was... Barry, you were following this, yeah?
I was following it on live scores because I had... Milan were the last team in my weekend accumulator. So I sort of... They were a goal down with 10 minutes to go. I kind of given them up for dead and I just checked the score. And... So it was 1-1 deep in injury time. And then blow me if they didn't score a winner in the most unlikely circumstances.
Well, it was all a bit bizarre.
A Nesta brace.
Well, that's it. A team with Ronaldinho and Pato and Borriello and Huntelaar and all this. And it was actually Alessandro Nesta, who, A, we all thought was finished some
time
ago.
Well, he's 75 years old.
No, he's not that old. He's 33. He didn't play for at least a year, so that's probably saved him from a bit of wear and tear. And he's been absolutely fantastic, as many posters have pointed out, since his return this season. He's been looking brilliant, and he scored both goals, both headers, first brace of his career. The other really amazing thing, though, about the Chievo-Milan game was that Nelson Dida made a fantastic save to safeguard the result. Right at the end, in about the 91st minute, when it was still 1-1, Chievo had a header from about an inch away from goal, and Dida stuck out a fist and managed to... It was a brilliant save. It's worth checking out on YouTube. And this after the appalling calamity there at the Bernabeu. Yes, there you go. Does that answer your question? I know I bigged it up at the start saying in bizarre circumstances. It is. If you've been following Dida's career, it's pretty remarkable to see him do that. Inter, meantime, though, stayed top. They beat Catania. But one or two worries there about Wesley Sneijder's hamstring, because he says that he felt a bit of pain and had to pull up and off he went. And he's now in doubt for the biggest game of our lives, as Jose Mourinho has dubbed the trip to Dynamo Kiev in, what, about 10 days' time. One other note, one poster bringing this point up, Woodison. I've just read that Christian Vieri has announced his retirement. He's one of my favourite Serie A players of all time, so it'd be good to hear any tales you might have about him.
Was it Vieri during Euro 2004 who and kind of surveyed the press and then informed them that they had no idea of how much of a man he was?
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
No, he said, I'm a man.
You have no idea.
I'm more a man than any of the rest of you put together. I can look at myself in the mirror in the morning. You can't.
Why were they all vampires?
No, it was bizarre because he was sat there ranting off and there's this room of about 200 people going, who's he mean? And he's always been a bit of a tetchy fellow. I remember because you probably know he was born near Bologna to a footballing father and they moved to Australia because his dad was playing for Sydney Marconi or something. So he lived there from about the age of 4 to the age of 14, speaks perfect English, refused to do an interview in English with me because that would be too easy. And, he can be a very difficult fellow. But then I went to meet him in Madrid one time because another thing about Vieri, well, there's so many things about him. He was a very particular man. In the first 9 years of his professional career, he played for 9 different clubs. Every year he would change clubs, do well at one, do well at Juventus, went to Atletico Madrid, scored 24 goals in 24 matches at Atletico Madrid, becoming Spain's top scorer. One brilliant one from the touchline. And then as soon as that season was over, then he was off to Lazio, did one season there, then he moved to Inter, and then things began to kind of fall apart after that. He is a brilliant businessman. He's got 2 clothing lines, brought out his own line of condoms at one stage. He has had hundreds of top drawer girlfriends, and yet famously lived with his mother when he went to play for Fiorentina. She had a big farm just outside of town, so he went to live with her instead of looking for his own place.
Is this a really, really roundabout way of saying he's...
No, I don't think so. No, he's right. More of a man than anybody in this room, that's for sure. But anyway, he...
I wasn't about to judge. I'm curious. I thought that was where your explanation was going.
No, I think... His love of his life, if I'm not mistaken, was Elisabetta Canales, who's now top fling for George Clooney. Anyway, and there you go. The other thing about Christian Vieri, I was just going to mention the fact he used to take the train. When he was living with his mum, he used to take the train into Fiorentina's training ground. No, that's nice, isn't it? You don't see many footballers getting on the train, commuting into town.
He obviously didn't know he'd get a horn if he got in the bus.
Right. As a player, he started out being absolutely phenomenal, and some would call him Italy's greatest pure striker of the last, well, I don't know, since... probably Gigi Riva or something like that. I mean, he was a phenomenal centre-forward. Producer Ben wants to know what his condom line was called, and it was part of the brand that he co-owns with Paolo Maldini called Sweet Years. Sweet Years launched its own condom line.
It's kind of ironic that someone famous or who made his name scoring goals started marketing his brand of prophylactics to stop people from slipping one past the goalie.
Blimey, Barry. It is, as you say, ironic. But where would football be without irony? Where? Good. Now, posts. Let's just move on and finish off with a couple of posts. Villa Support Group says he liked Jonathan Wilson's Apollonian Dionysian bit too. Looks like Wilson has really secured his Nietzsche on the pod. Has anyone in the pod ever done voiceover work for second-rate video games? Yes, I have. And I'm available. And, says Villa Support Group, if you're going to do an MLS bit, Monday would be a pretty good time to do it. With 6 teams, New England, FC Dallas, DC United, Colorado, Real Salt Lake, and Toronto FC vying in a do-or-die final match battle for the last playoff spot. Well, what do you think, Barry? It's a huge weekend. Do you think we could spare, say, 30 seconds to our American cousins?
Suppose we could, yeah.
All right, then, Producer Ben. Cue them up on the clock and let's let Barry rip.
Well, the reason we're devoting such a disproportionately large chunk of today's show to American soccer ball is because it was one of the most exciting weekends in MLS history, with six teams vying for the two remaining places that were up for grabs in the eight-team end-of-season playoffs. Toronto, Colorado, DC United and Dallas all put themselves out of contention by losing their final matches, while New England and Real Salt Lake both catapulted themselves into the playoffs with wins over Columbus and Colorado, respectively. Of course, anyone with a passing interest in MLS, i.e. nobody on this podcast and hardly any of our listeners, will know that the MLS is split into two conferences, the Western and the other one. Having finished bottom of the Western last season, LA Galaxy won it this time around.
Whoa, way to go, Barry.
That was all off the top of my head.
Hey, outstanding. Sorry, you were saying LA Galaxy won it this time around. What did they win?
They won the Western Conference.
The Western Conference.
With a win over San Jose Earthquakes.
All right, now, forgive me. Who won the Eastern Conference?
Oh, I don't know.
You probably said it in there.
No, I didn't. But the San Jose Earthquakes were missing last year's MLS Newcomer of the Year. Who do you think that was? Darren Huckerby.
Right.
He retired earlier this season with a hip injury. So the Galaxy now will have to attempt to win the championship outright next month.
Against somebody.
Alongside Columbus Crew, Houston Dynamo, the Chicago Flamethrowers, Seattle Shapeshifters, Chivas Arribas, New England Patriots and the Salt Lake Mormons. It's exciting times ahead.
My, they have such colourful names. Yeah.
And David Beckham, the Galaxy fans have all... they've forgiven David Beckham for forsaking them for Milan, and he got a big round of applause for his part in their win.
That's great news. All right, well done to everyone involved in that, and you, Barry, for that rip-roaring 30-second roundup. That, I believe, is that. And what a high to end everything on. We'll be back on Thursday with Football Weekly Extra. And we'll be looking back on, God forbid, the Carling Cup, I suppose, possibly. And of course, forward to all the major excitements coming up at the weekend and anything else that comes our way. But in the meantime, many thanks to producer Ben and to you, Rob Smythe.
Thank you, James.
Good to see you with a little bit more of a twinkle in your eye. Do you feel a bit better now?
No.
James Dard.
Cheers, James. Can I just say, can anyone check out the YouTube of Galatasaray Fenerbahce for a fantastic pre-match warm-up fight between the teams? Well worth seeing.
Magnificent. And you, Barry Glennon, many thanks as well.
You're welcome.
Good news. Listeners will be back on Thursday. See you then.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with SportingBet.com.